Hi everyone, welcome to the latest episode of Dialogues on Applied Channel Theory. I'm Jonathan in Beijing, and I'm here today with Nisa, who's in New York. Hi, Nisa.
Hi, John. Good to see you.
Yeah, so today I was hoping that we could talk about a little bit more on Dr. Wang. Like, who is Dr. Wang? Like, some certain, like, how Dr. Wang, not only did it influence us in our clinical practice in terms of, you know, using channel theory or channel palpation and how that's helped us, but also, you know, his character, his personality, and how that also might have influenced us too. And the main thing I wanted to focus on was Dr. Wang and swimming, because swimming, I think, outside of Chinese medicine, like for Dr. Wang, like his main passion obviously was Chinese medicine. But I think one of his second, probably you could say his second passion was swimming, right? Like he loved talking about swimming. He loved swimming. And Nisa actually had a lot of experience swimming with Dr. Wang, right? During your time studying with Dr. Wang in Beijing.
It was a really nice sort of like side sort of thing that I had with Dr. Wang. Like we would have clinic in the mornings, and in the summer, we'd have some lunch, and then there was like this big outdoor pool. And so I don't know, I probably went with him like a handful of times. It wasn't that many. I can't remember now, but we would go in the afternoon. It was so hot in Beijing. And so we'd just go and like do some laps. But Dr. Wang really was, he really did love swimming. And he, wait, so remind me, you never even saw him swim?
I never saw him swim. So when I started studying with him, he already said he pretty much stopped swimming. Like, cause he felt like, he told me once that like, once he reached 70, he just didn't want to be in the water anymore, which for him, it must have been strange because he loved swimming. He just felt like being in the water was too cold for him after he reached 70. So I think, but he told that he would always talk about swimming, like when, not always, but you know, like during lunch or sometimes he'd reminisce about it, like how he'd always say like he could spend like hours in a lake, right? Just kind of floating around. Like I think even when he was younger, right? When he was a child, he taught himself how to swim in the canals around Beijing. Was that?
Yeah,
from what I remember.
Exactly. He would go, he would like, I think even run away or not run away, but he would disappear from home and he would be swimming in the, I guess that would have been the second ring around Beijing is the canal there.
And then he, I think even when he was working at, as a young doctor, when he was at the Quanjie Hospital, at Beijing TCM Hospital, he, on his lunch breaks, he would always tell about, he'd just grab a few mantos, like steamed buns, and then ride his bike to the Shichahai, the Hohai area, like go swimming in the lake, right? And that was his like afternoon kind of break. And then eat some mantos, steam buns, and go back and start treating patients, continue treating patients. But so I never, funny. I personally never swam with him, but I always heard him talk about it. And I always heard you guys, at least you, I remember your stories were really interesting. Can you talk about the race?
Sure. I mean, so one thing to mention is that he was really, really comfortable in the water. Like you could just see that he was really relaxed. His favorite was like the side stroke, and he would just, and the hat that he wore in clinic, sometimes he would even just leave the hat on because his head would never like really go under the water, and he could just do the side stroke and really, really relaxed and just one with the water. So one day, he would come up with these like games. So we would do laps, but again, he was a very slow, relaxed swimmer. So this wasn't really racing, but just sort of making our way back and forth. And one day he came up with a relay, or not relay, I guess he was like, how about if we swim backwards? And I was like, what do you mean, Dr. Wang? He's like, let's lie on our backs, but swim towards our feet instead of, you know, instead of going head first, we would go feet first. And it is really surprisingly difficult to do.
And probably so, extremely slow too.
Extremely slow. And this was a very, very big pool. And so I think it took us so long to get across the, you know, just one length. And I do remember, I think there's a lifeguard, you know, some young guy who was the lifeguard that day. And he thought it was hilarious. He was just like, what are you guys doing? It was just like the most slow motion, quote unquote, race across the pool.
So were you talking while this was going on, or were you just seriously trying to win the race, or?
No, we were laughing because if you ever have a chance to be in a pool, like, or the next time you get a chance, just try it. It's so slow and it's very counterintuitive to try to go backwards. It's actually mostly your arms. And so you're just kind of floating and trying to move towards your feet. But so we were laughing and, you know, yeah, kind of chatting. I think he was also surprised. He's like, oh, I've never tried this. It's quite slow. but it does say so much about his curiosity, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's one really big thing I took away from being his student was just he was constantly like he was constantly kind of curious and very playful in his curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he would apply that, like, I guess his work as a clinician, you just couldn't separate it from who he was as a person. Mm-hmm. So that same curiosity was in the clinic and he would bring it out into his day-to-day life. So I think he might have even mentioned like, oh, like our muscles are not used to doing this, like movement in the water. And so, you know, he thinks about things like that too. Mm-hmm. So what about you, like spending sort of like non-clinic time with him? Oh, yeah.
Oh, can I ask you one question? Who won the race?
I think I let him win.
Oh.
Because he was just enjoying himself so much. And so like, it was more just like we were just like floating. So,
just one thing I wanted to mention, I remember he was talking to us about like his swimming technique, like the side stroke. He said he learned it from watching one of those like old, like movies, like war movies, like from Russia when he was a kid. And like, there's a soldier. I don't know. I'm sure some people might know this film. I don't know it, but he remembers when he was a child seeing this film of this Russian soldier who swims across this river, and then in one hand he's carrying his rifle, and then he's swimming across the river like doing that side stroke. And then Dr. Wan loved that, so he taught himself that side stroke from that Russian war movie.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, like what are some examples from outside of clinic time that you really, you know, learned from
Dr. Wan? I think my experience with Dr. Wong was a little bit different, because I think when you guys were here, he was like, he'd take you guys out on trips a lot and things like that, right? Like, for me, a lot of my time with him was in the clinic. So like my day with him would be, I'd show up to the clinic, you know, he'd translate, you know, and there'd be students around, we'd help teach them things like palpation or point locations. He would lecture, I'd translate, and then in the afternoons, he would take his nap. I would just help reorganize a lot of like his cases and the videos we were filming. I'd be editing those and then reorganizing them. And at the end of the day, we would just chat about things, about cases or different students or different things that were going on. And then I'd walk him home. I'd walk him back to his apartment, which is nearby, right? It was like pretty much across the street from the clinic. So that was my, like, it. A lot of my interaction with him was just like in this very kind of calm kind of experience, like environment, I would say. And then just seeing, so for me, it was just, I don't know. It was just kind of very, for me, I felt that it was just a very relaxing kind of being around him all the time. Cause he was never in a rush. He's always very considerate. Like if you ask questions, he'd really take his time to think about it. Like sometimes you'd ask him a question and, sometimes he'd give you immediate response, right? Like if it's something that he really had thought about, and he'd give you really immediate response. Sometimes he wouldn't even respond to you. And sometimes I'd be like, oh, well, like, was it a stupid question or what's going on? And then like maybe a day later or 2 days later, he'd just give you a response. And it was like, it shows that he's very considerate, very thoughtful. Another thing I realized, just another thing that influenced me a lot was just his, just because he has that very, he was never in a rush. He's very meticulous and just, I guess you could say in some ways very methodical as a clinician, right? So that kind of very, and that makes him take this very slow approach to treating patients. And you could tell he's never in a rush, right? He's never worried, or he wouldn't get really anxious when he's treating a patient, which I think sometimes young practitioners, sometimes you see a patient like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Will this work? And you get, you know, and then you get a little anxious and you might start using more points and you might use more of like a complex treatment instead of using something more simple, I think. And Dr. Ron, I think, is for every patient, he took this very, just very clear and like slow approach.
I think as an apprentice, like there's like, I really learned a lot about patients. Like you said, like sometimes you might ask him a question and the answer could come maybe immediately, but sometimes like a week later, a month later, but he was also, he always very thoughtful. And I think as a clinician, right, he was really grounded and really present. And, you know, I remember like having students who are visiting to study with him and, you know, trying to maintain some quiet because like he really is there, like he's present with his patients and he's really paying attention. He's very thoughtful when he's palpating. And that is something I do try to channel, that his energy basically when I'm in clinic too, to, yeah, kind of take a breath, ground myself. I loved the moment sometimes, like it would be after he did the intake and he took the pulse and he palpated and he would be at the bedside and he would kind of stop. And sometimes he would even put his like hand on his chin and just like, he would kind of like stare into the distance and you could just see him thinking and taking a moment to himself to pick the treatment that he wanted. And I tried to do that too, you know, like I think, yeah, as a younger as a newer practitioner, you know, sometimes there's that pressure to show the patients we know what we're doing. And I try to take a pause and, you know, it's okay to even just like stop for a moment with the patient and be like, I'm just thinking this through. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. And to be patient with myself as well. I don't know. It helps me kind of stay also grounded and kind of give, you know, try to get some clarity about what my diagnosis is and what I'm doing with the patient.
I guess one thing, like you're asking about the curiosity, like Dr. Ron's curiosity, I guess, cause I was always with him in the clinic. So for me, it was more like how that's, you know, when he was in his mid to late 70s or like in 80, he was always still fascinated by Chinese medicine, just like things that I thought that was amazing, that he would still like read all the time about Chinese medicine. He'd read all these different journal articles or like newspaper TCM, like newspapers. And if there's an interesting article, he'd cut it out and he'd paste it. And he had this book. I probably had tons of these books, but I remember seeing that he'd cut out an article that he thought was really interesting and he'd glue it into this magazine, like a little booklet, and it was full of different articles and he had circled them, made comments. And then like even clinically too, when he's treating patients, something interesting would happen. He'd be like, oh, like I remember once he needed all the patients, like a point on the shayang on the head or something. And the patient had traveling sensation all the way down to like the distal regions of the foot shayang channel, like to the foot. And he was like, oh, so he was so fascinated by it. Like even that probably happened to him multiple times in his career, but like to still be like fascinated by like this medicine is very inspiring for me.
Yeah, for sure. Like that is so inspiring. And I try to, that's definitely something I try to take into my clinic. Like no matter how many like patients with migraines that I've treated, like each one is unique. And the way someone responds to the treatment is always unique. And like, just, I think it's really important as clinicians to maintain that sense of wonder. To not take our medicine for granted, not to take our patients for granted, that each patient and each visit is this unique experience. And I loved it when he was like, oh, like, you know, he's like, oh, like, you know, the sages were so brilliant to figure this out, you know. And it's funny, I have moments in clinic where I really do find myself like, does it happen to you too? Where I will, you know, a patient might get a certain needle sensation. I'm like, oh yeah, like, isn't it cool? Like, you know, I try to, again, like I was very inspired by Dr. Wang's, that sense of wonderment at our medicine. It's really special, you know? And I think of a story go ahead.
I think that's what kept him going for like just, you know, researching and practicing Chinese medicine all the way until pretty much he passed away, right? Like he was just so fascinated by it. I think that was the thing that like this fire that just kept him intriguing him, right, about Chinese medicine. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, really, even up until the end when he was sick, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like even when at the end, like, he still had that curiosity about even what was happening to his own body, mm-hmm. which was, still just trying to make sense of it and mm-hmm. to keep learning, right? He really was like learning until, you know, the very end. Mm-hmm. And I think of a story actually you told me, and you'll have to remind me, but I think he was in clinic and he was teaching. And he was talking about channels, and didn't he start thinking about plants, or there was a plant or a tree nearby that was like wilting, and he did acupuncture on the plant?
Oh yeah. Yeah. He would talk about that, doing acupuncture on plants.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, that was one thing he got. He was really kind of went on this little tangent about like talking about giving acupuncture on plants and his household plants I think even like Dr. Wang Hongmin was inspired by that. And who's one of Dr. Wang's students in Beijing. And she teaches mm-hmm. at the Beijing School for the Blind. And then I guess she started doing this in the trees in their school. And like mm-hmm. with her students, they would be acupuncturing the trees, like That's the so magnolia great. Trees and stuff like that. And they're showing photos and they bring them to the clinic. I mean, Dr. Wang Hongmin bring them to the clinic and Dr. Wang be like, oh, so fascinating. He was so happy.
That's so great. Yeah, I remember also, this was probably 2004 in Beijing. I was there studying with this other student, Steve, and Dr. Wang, after clinic one day, took us up to, we went for a hike. I can't remember which park it was now, but it was like a forest and we were like walking through the woods, and at the very top there was like a little tea house and we stopped for tea. But the entire walk, like, it, you know, the whole purpose was just to be out in nature, but he just can't think, he can't help himself from thinking about Chinese medicine. So, you know, we're watching like the water flow through the trees and he's like, oh, look, the channels, and, you know, like, oh, like that's like the sheet cleft point where like it's working its way through a small space, or just always, he was always bringing back whatever was happening around him back to thinking about our medicine. And, you know, and in that way, it just keeps our medicine really alive also. Right. So I used to love translating for him when he was teaching too, because, the way he would pull metaphors from life. So he would, it could be like, oh, like trucks bringing things into a factory, and, or like things on a highway, like a river system, like, and barges coming in and out and dropping things off. And you just realize how, what's the word? How integrated Chinese medicine was for him in his whole approach and philosophy of life, so that it really becomes like this living, breathing thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, really inspiring.
Yeah, I think like, yeah, he never stopped thinking about channels. I think that was like, it totally consumed him, I think.
Yeah.
I remember he told me this one story about when he was a young student, like, and he was sitting on this, on a bus. And then he was watching, like, while they're sitting on, like, on the bus, like, you know, the streets in Beijing, they're a lot of like trees, right? That like tree lined streets. And like, so they're in this bus going down the street, and then he could see the shadows of the leaves, like on the people or like on parts of the bus or whatever, and just kind of whizzing by. And then he started to think like, hey, what if, like, could I tell what kind of tree it is by just looking at the shadow of the leaves? When he's thinking about that imagery of the leaves, it might've led to this, to later develop this method of channel diagnosis or channel examination.
Yeah, or maybe something about being able to approach something from different angles.
Yeah.
So you don't need the actual object, but right, like, you can come at it from,
yeah, you don't have to look at the heart itself or the lung itself. Mm-hmm. Another thing about Dr. Wang I thought was interesting was the like everything around him could be in chaos. Like, you know, there's a lot of action in the clinic, but he'd be exactly the same. Like, he'd just mm-hmm. take his time walking. You never saw him rushing across the clinic. He's just taking his time. Mm-hmm. And like with even the patients, all the patients, it doesn't matter how many people were there, he'd be, take his time palpating the mm-hmm. for the location, the point, and getting the right, mm-hmm. you know, traveling sensation. And mm-hmm. so that's one thing I always keep in the back of my mind too, that mm-hmm. just kind of calm down, well, slow down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, I mean, one of his favorite things to say was, we are dodgy,
right?
Like he was always like, don't get all, you know, frazzled, take yeah. your time. And it's interesting too, because I think watching students observe him, I think he got the question a lot, like, oh, do you meditate, or where's your intention, or right, like a lot of questions about sort of the more spiritual side of things, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he was always like, he always kind of just brushed those questions aside, which was interesting. But in practice, you know, you could, he did work on his breath and, you know, cultivating that groundedness and that mindfulness. And I think that was, I think like a lot of things, like he didn't really take credit for it, because he was like, if you actually just let the medicine do its thing and you spend the time being curious, then you let the acupuncture do its work. But yeah, it did. I think he didn't like to take credit for it, but he did practice that mindfulness. And I think mm-hmm. he was very purposeful about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, he also said like his qigong was doing acupuncture, right? Like he always says like when you give a needle a person, or I guess even palpating chants, you have to be grounded, right? You have to like,
yeah,
your chi has to be in your dantian. You have to be really calm and like take your time, like don't be in a rush. Like,
yeah. Yeah. As much as, I mean, obviously it's endless what he taught me about the actual medicine. But it's really sort of like this, he made it so human, the medicine, right? He really, it was very much this living medicine, and, I don't know. He just had this respect for it and respect for his patients that, you know, there's something really intangible about what I think I learned from him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, a lot of the information is in his books and in recordings and stuff, but there's this, this something intangible that he taught, which is really that sort of, it really is about staying curious and mm-hmm. I think really connecting with people. Like he was really mm-hmm. just such a good practitioner. He really, it was so fun. Yeah, and so funny too. Mm-hmm. I think that's what was like, he really connected with his patients.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I think swimming too was maybe also his way of also just kind of relaxing, calming down, being in the moment, just grounding himself I think being in water, I guess, is also pretty calming, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think he, again, I wish, you know, this is before smartphones and stuff. So like, I don't have video, but like, he really was so at ease and so, you know how some people are just like naturals in water? Even just when he like looked at water, I think wherever he traveled, he just liked to sort of like see water and be around it. And so, I do think that was part of, grounded him. I think another big takeaway is like, you know, he was such an academic also, right? Like a scholar of all the classics and everything. But in the moment with his patients, you can't overthink things in clinic either, right? So I think sometimes like it can be easy to be like, oh, well, there's that one, you know, like one theory that I read about or one point combination that I thought about. And sometimes like I think the sort of more academic mind wants to make the patient fit into what we've learned. And so he was such a good example of like taking all of that history of where the medicine came from, but in the moment with his patients, like, you know, really just saw what was in front of him and allowed that like flexibility and curiosity to really kind of go with the flow. And I think that can be hard to do. And he did it really well. And I think that's ultimately also where palpation was so, so critical to the way he worked, because what we find in the channels through palpation keeps us super present, right? So again, like whatever ideas might be floating in our head about diagnosis, like once you touch the patient's channels, then, you know, whatever theory you might be stuck on, the channels are going to tell you kind of the truth of what's happening. So yeah, I think a good reminder too.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think that's something that I think we experience on a daily basis, right? With all of our patients that like, yeah, that tendency, I think for me, like sometimes like I find myself sometimes for very complex cases, sometimes my mind, you just get kind of, sometimes it's easy to get confused. Right. But then, but I think when I try to remember, like, you know, to follow the process, like I think Dr. Ron was very good at just following a very clear process, like approach, like from asking good questions, like palpating, carefully palpating the channels, and then just trusting that you will eventually gain a like clear diagnosis or a clear understanding. I think that's one thing I try to keep in mind whenever I encounter those very difficult patients. Difficult cases, not difficult patients.
Yeah.
Do you often in your clinical practice, do you often remind yourself or just think in the back of your mind, like, oh, Dr. Wong was right. Do you have those moments?
Well, I have a lot of like, well, I mean, probably every day, but like, you know, sort of like a, what would Dr. Wong do?
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, like, oh, I palpated this stuff, but what would Dr. Wong do? And to, I mean, I guess maybe that's a way for me to slow down and like really kind of think through the process, like you said, to trust the process. I think, sometimes, yeah, like maybe it's like something I palpate and like, you know, and it's like, oh yeah, look at this, like, you know, collateral nodule. I'm like, gosh, yeah. Like Dr. Wong, like he just like, yeah. Like, or even just, or like I sometimes think like, oh, this is such a cool channel finding. I wish I could share it with Dr. Wong.
I know. Right? Yeah.
Like stuff like that. Like, I think we had a conversation, you and I, maybe last time about like the crunchy, the cui luo in the heart channel and like stuff like that. When I come across sort of unusual findings, like, you know, I do sort of stop and like, like this is so wild, you know. It's exactly what Dr. Wong would have described. But yeah, I think this is thank you for this opportunity. I think it's good for us to, I don't know, to remember like all these aspects of him, right? Like it's really an approach to our medicine and not just theory or technique or
Definitely. So cool. That makes me, so I know you have a busy day ahead of you.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Yeah, and we'll talk again.
Yes.
And soon, hopefully.